come on in.
And now, back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
The kids love it.
And your host,
welcome to paradise,
Bill Frank.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show on KVTA News Talk 1520. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is things that impact our lives. Each of my guests will discuss his or her subject and relate it to current events. My next guest believes that we're entering into a new era of consumerism, one in which demand will drive supply far more directly, efficiently, and compellingly than ever before. We'll discuss his ideas contained in his latest book, The Intention Economy. Doc Searles is the co-author of The Clue Train Manifesto and the author of The Intention Economy, When Customers Take Charge. He's an American journalist, a columnist, and a widely read blogger. Doc is a fellow at the Center for Information Technology and Science at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and he's an alumnus of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Joining us from back east, hi Doc, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest, and let's dive right into it, because you have a very compelling book about the intention economy, but we need to sort of start with where we are today. So differentiate between where we are today in what I call the attention economy, and then move us forward, if you will, to the intention economy that you see emerging.
Okay, well, where we are today is in the middle stages of a revolution that began with the personal computer in 1982. What happened then is something called data processing that was only done by big companies could suddenly be done by individuals. The second part of that was the Internet, which gave every one of us a simple, easy, and very cheap way to connect instantly with anybody else in the world. That happened in 1995. The third thing was a smartphone, which put both personal power and communication power in our pockets. But we haven't moved very far in some other ways. So, for example, a lot of large companies, pretty much all of them that you deal with, still internally look to do things like capture, target capture, lock in, manage, and control customers. And your loyalty cards are attempts to do that. The tracking that takes place on the web when you're going around is another attempt to do that. That serves the attention economy. That's the attention with an A. It assumes that it's the job of the seller to get the attention of the buyer and then to run the relationship once that relationship happens. The intention economy is what happens as the revolution in personal empowerment continues and we get more power as individuals to control our own data, to control our own relationships, to initiate relationships in the way that we deal with companies. And for their own good, they're going to follow along.
All right, Doc. And this is a huge paradigm shift that you're talking about. How are we going to convince both customers and sellers on your principle and get them to convert?
Well, basically what we need are the tools. And there are, if you go to projectvrm.org, you'll see a blog, and there are links there to a wiki that we've got with a list of about 50 companies and development projects. Some of them are just open source development projects. They're not commercial, but they're important, that are working to provide tools that make individuals both independent of sellers but better able to engage. So there are a whole bunch of them called personal data lockers and stores and clouds and vaults that are where you store your data that you can use as you go about your business. That may be healthcare data, might be fitness data, and so on, that make you more valuable as a customer. That's one category. There are others that are just what I might call prophylaxis. They prevent the bad guys from doing, or they're not bad guys, but they prevent the sell side from trying to follow you. So, for example, about 1 out of 10 users today worldwide are using ad blockers and tracking blockers on their browsers and to send signals to the sellers that they don't want to be tracked. We don't really need the federal government to tell us, you know, we need do not track laws when the customers are already using tools available to them to send that signal. So that's just starting out, but that's another way that it'll happen.
All right. That makes sense. My guest is Doc Searles, author of the new book, The Intention Economy. But, Doc, before we leave this whole attention with an A versus intention with an I, I want to come back and talk about the attention economy, because that has served us well for over 100 years at this point. And there's something to be said about generating or creating or manufacturing, as you say in the book, desire. For example, Nobody knew that they needed an iPhone until Apple came out with the iPhone, and Apple literally manufactured the desire. Won't we lose the ability to find or discover through serendipity products like the iPhone?
No, not at all. They're totally complementary. I was in the, you know, much of my adult life, I was in the advertising business myself. I was in radio. That's where I got my nickname, Doc.
I know, up in, yes, at Duke University.
A thousand years ago. And we had an advertising agency that was one of the biggest in Silicon Valley for a long time, called Hodgkin, Simone & Searles in Palo Alto. And so I know how that works, and I'm a great admirer of Apple. And in fact, the way marketing works is you have either a necessity mother your invention, or you have an invention that mothers necessity, and that's what Apple has done all along with the iPhone and all the other things that they've done. That doesn't go away. It just gets better. I mean, what happens is you have advertising doing what it does best, which is simply letting you know that here's a substantial company, it can afford to advertise, it's serious, here's its brand name, here's the really creative thing it's doing, seeing the truck, flying, across the desert and spinning out. I mean, that's not a bad thing. That tells you something about the truck, and, there's nothing wrong with advertising of that sort. Recently, in what we've had is increased personalization of advertising, which I think actually is not a breed of advertising, but of direct marketing, which is a different breed of marketing entirely. And I think that we lose some of what that old branding that we got with, Apple-type advertising for 150 years provided to us. If you've got a perfectly personalized ad, when you go to somebody's blog, that seems creepy because, wait a minute, how does this machine know that I just looked at shoes? And why do they think I want more shoes?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing, I think, is really misguided right now and kind of going overboard in the wrong direction, because it assumes that big data, that's a really hot topic right now, big data, can know you better than you know yourself. And that's just, I think, wrong, but to me it's kind of like the death rattle of a misguided way of looking at how customers ought to relate to sellers.
All right, well, I can see the conceit in that. My guest is Doc Searles. I see the conceit in that, but big data becoming big brother, that's one of the central themes of your book and the things that you talk about. Eric Schmidt, who is or was the CEO of Google now, I believe he's chairman of the board, some title like that, he says that Google knows all about you. I mean, there's some value there. Certainly that's an uncanny ability that they have. Why do you think that's the death rattle?
Well, I don't think that's the death rattle. I think Google itself can go a little bit overboard there, and certainly Eric has more than once. The interesting thing with Google knows what it knows because you have intent when you go when you use the browser. I mean, when you use their search. I mean, if you're in Ventura and you're looking for cowboy boots, that's useful information for Google, and they'll personalize that for you to some degree. The thing is that you can go overboard with this. I mean, so for example, I actually have several browsers where I go out of my way to not be known by Google because I want to know. I don't need a lot of personalized guesswork if I'm looking for the height of Mount Everest or if I'm doing a non-commercial search. Very often, most of the time, frankly, we're not in the marketplace. We're in the sense that we're shopping. We're in the marketplace in the sense that we're just doing something. The vast majority of things that we're looking for or information that we want is not of a commercial nature, and it's not even a very good clue for what we might want. Again, I think Google is way ahead of other companies in having a search system that is looking at your intent at all times, and that gives them some advantage. But they don't know everything about you, nor should they. And I should say also, Google is somewhat more moral, I think, about how they use data than other companies are. So I want to give them some respect on that. But on the whole, the online advertising industry has sort of embraced big data and a fantasy about big data that assumes that perfect personalization is going to work for you. And I think at a certain point it enters what's called the uncanny valley, which is where things are a little bit too personal. Since the robot is human-like, but not quite human, and we see that actually a lot already on Facebook. I mean, Facebook advertising is notoriously bad, and the guesswork is horrible, and in many cases, I mean, it must work enough to make them a few billion dollars, but and you can't dismiss that, but I guarantee you right now, if you go to Facebook and look at the ads they give you, most of them are wrong, or way off.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. My guest is Doc Searles, author of The Intention Economy. So, Doc, in the book and elsewhere, you've talked about some tools that you use to sort of screen yourself from the mass marketers, the direct marketers, things like Ghostery Software, Rapleaf. Explain what these do and why they're important, how you utilize them.
Well, there are a number of browser add-ons, a Privacy Watch, Disconnect Me, Ghostery, Collusion, which runs on Firefox, and others. Those are all handy. Ghostery will tell you who's tracking you at any given time as a pop-down menu. There's a VRM company called Provony, P-R-I-V-O-W-N-Y, which has a little strip that appears on the side of your browser that gives you, it's a VRM tool that gives you a way of to relate to the sites that you go to, and it keeps track of who's tracking you or who you've given up data to, or who you've given your credit card number to, or if you've used one of their email addresses they can provide for you that they don't know, but you do, they can see where that email address might have been given away by somebody. Those are cool tools. You mentioned Rapleaf. That's a company in San Francisco that actually does some of the tracking stuff, and I mentioned them in the book because what they have on me is actually quite bad. I live in Santa Barbara, and they have a zip code in Northern California. I've changed it twice for them, and they didn't notice.
Wow. That is amazing. So, Doc, then let's talk about VRM, which is Vendor Relationship Management, which is the thrust of your book. Differentiate between VRM and CRM, which stands for Customer Relation Management, and what do you hope to accomplish with VRM?
Well, first of all, CRM is, by some estimates, an $18 billion industry with giant companies like IBM and Oracle and SAP and Microsoft selling large software systems and packages to and services like Salesforce sells a service to very large companies to manage their relationships with customers and through their salespeople and so forth. And VRM, which is Vendor Relationship Management, was conceived as the customer-side counterpart of that. It's what you and I would have, and it's what in Silicon Valley we used to call a $0 billion business right now. So it's really early in the development of CRM tools. Like I said, there's like 50 companies right now that are working on it. There are new ones every day. I'm not kidding. Every day they contact me and say, hey, we're doing VRM too. So, but it's still, if you look at the adoption curve, you know, that long kind of stretch, that S curve that has pioneering on the left, and then, you know, early adopters, and then early majority, and then late majority and laggards. We're way over on the left at the very early adopter stage. It's kind of past the pure pioneering stage, but it's being worked out. It's kind of like email was in 1995, say, you know, or browsing even a little before that, when you know, before Microsoft and Netscape picked it up, but there were open source browsers out there already. It's kind of at that point where you can see the ground starting to shake, but we don't have the earthquake yet. But count on it. It'll happen.
Well, it will happen. I mean, if you read your book, The Intention Economy, you can see how the dominoes are lining up for this. Doc, if you will, please, though, you know, talk to us about some of the things that you want to accomplish. The thing that struck me most was the control that I would have as an individual over the gathering and the control of my own personal data, which was a central theme of your book. Talk to us about how VRM helps me in that regard.
Okay, first, there are a number of ways that we are already collecting some of this data. Obviously, we have some of it with financial transactions. Mint.com, for example, is one you could even think of as a kind of a VRM tool for that. Also, lots of what's called self-hacking and personal informatics, all the fitness stuff that you can do. You have DigiFit, for example, is a good company in Santa Barbara. There's Fitbit. There's stuff you can get from Nike and stick it in your shoe or wear it as an armband that will collect data for you. There's a Withings scale. Withings is a company. I have one of their scales that tells me I weigh the same every day. But But I have a clear record of that, and it's all in a form that I can use. Well, there, that has health implications. You know, that has other implications. We're just beginning to get these tools together. There's a lot of competition between companies around this. How will they get standardized? How this becomes easy to use is a completely open question at this point. Pulling it all together, you need to get the motivation together for it. What's going to be the payoff for people? Obviously, with health, there's a big one. You know, and with finance, there's a big one. With other topics, maybe not so much. But somebody is going to offer the tool or the set of tools that make it really easy to gather this stuff up and put it to use. Right now, in Europe, they're way ahead of us on this, by the way. For example, the UK government has a project called MyData, which some VRM developers are working with the UK government on, which the purpose of which is to have the government give to the citizens the data it's collected on them. Citizen has to prove they're the citizen, but the assumption is, you know what, the individual citizen is in a better position to know what to do with this. For example, changing an address. You know what your address is. If you change your address, you can tell all of the different government agencies at once, I changed this address. That's a VRM tool that will do that. And for that matter, you can tell all of the retailers that you have loyalty cards with, hey, I changed this address too. That's another thing that where if you're in charge of the data, you have a much better opportunity to do the right thing with it than a whole bunch of different agencies and organizations guessing at, you know, has this guy moved or not? I don't know. And in fact, it's the machine doing the thinking anyway, and usually they get it wrong. So that's the main advantage of an individual having the control, but we need the tools to be really easy to use. And we're not there yet.
Well, you've given us a glimpse into that future. My guest has been Doc Searles, author of the book, The Intention Economy, When Customers Take Charge. Doc, you've probably piqued the interest of some of my listeners. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about your book, where would you direct them to go?
Well, for me, just look up Doc Searles. That's Searles spelled like pearls, only with an S. I'm pretty easy to find. The book is called The Intention Economy, but if you look me up on Amazon, you'll find the book there. And, yeah, or go to Customer Commons. That's a new organization we just put together to carry this work forward, and you can join in there. That's just those two words together, customercommons.org.
Doc, it has been an honor. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
My pleasure, too.